Good evening, everyone. This is your co-host, Stu, and I am here with author, paranormal investigator, and the paranormalist, Patty A. Wilson. Hi, Patty. How are you?
I'm doing just fine this evening. How are you, Stu?
I'm exuberant right now because I'm caffeinated now.
Well, I'm exuberant too. I had some really wonderful things happen in my life recently, and I'm really happy for them. But I also have a really interesting podcast to share tonight. I titled this when I did the notes as Dreaming a Little Dream. I have to tell you, as you well know, and I'm sure some of our longtime listeners know, I used to do some hospice work. And it's a really rewarding job. I'm glad I did it. I would do it again if I needed to. But it takes a piece of you every time. It does take a little bit of you. And I found this amazing book that was written by this gentleman. Here's his story, his backstory real quick. So as a young doctor just out of medical school, he gets asked if he'll do some time at a hospice center, which is a place where people are going for the last few weeks of their life, okay? Mm-hmm. And he does. He agrees to do this job. And the thing that struck me, I read this gentleman's book, and the thing that struck me about the book was at the very beginning, he talked about when he walked through the doors, he was like every other doctor. They thought that death was their enemy, and their job was to fight death. But then he took this job, and you can't fight death. You know, they're there to die. And he thought that death was the opposite of life. And his 20 years that he's now been at this hospice center has changed his life immensely, because death isn't the enemy of life. Death is just simply a new birth. And he's come to realize that. And the stories that he's talking about are stories that aren't often told. People who deal with the hospice and what have you, you hear the stories. You hear the stories of them seeing a loved one, or of them dreaming about somebody that they loved or enjoyed being with when they were younger. But everybody poo-poos it. You know, it's just a dream. It's just a hallucination. It's a this or it's that. I've had some experiences I know were not hallucinations with clients. And maybe if we have time, I'll tell a couple of them. But for right now, I want to talk about this subject in a different way. So people dying have sometimes the most vivid dreams. Probably about 65 to 70% of people before they pass away either have a very, very vivid dream or series of them, or physically see while awake loved ones or angels or even Jesus. And these things feel more real than imaginary, more than just a dream. There are now doctors and scientists who are going into this, and they're looking at these visions or dreams, and they're chronicling them, and they're saying this is a part of the dying process. Now, I will grant you there are people who are very, very sick who hallucinate through delusions at the very end, but when you break that stuff away, there is something else going on. There's a study from Moldova, and it states that they estimate 40% of the people that they interviewed had a dream or a vision within a day or so before they died. There are others, studies from all around the world, who are coming up with similar amounts. It doesn't matter if the people are religious. It doesn't matter what their faith is in that country. These stories are consistent all around the world. There's a wonderful painting, if you ever get to look at it, by Edward Munich, and it's called Death. It's Death in a Sick Room. He painted it in 1893, and it's this amazing painting of this family grouped around his sister, Sophie, before she died. And she's sitting in a chair with her back to them, and yet all her family surrounding her, the dead family, has come to be with her. And I just thought it's a very powerful painting. So fast forward to this gentleman, Dr. Carr, who wrote the book. And Dr. Carr was his journey was a fascinating journey to read. So I wanted to just share some of the stories that he has collected or that other people have collected about or from these people who are passing away. These are their stories. One of his very first stories was of his encounters where he came into touch with people who had visions or had a very special event or dream. Was a woman named Mary. She was 72 years old. She was at the hospice in Buffalo, New York. And one day when he walked in, there was family gathered around her, and she, you know, her time was coming. They were visiting with her, and she was sitting in a rocking chair, and Mary suddenly bent over and picked up nothing. It looked like she was picking up something, but they couldn't see anything. And she put this in her arms and held it like a baby. And she begins to rock this baby, this invisible baby. She kisses this infant and she tells them, "This is my baby." And she kisses this baby and she, you know, she takes her hands across this invisible baby's face and head. And then she starts cooing to him and she calls him Danny. She seems to be finding so much joy in what she's doing. She's putting so much love into this infant that nobody else can see. And people were really confused. Her family was confused. Her children were there. They wanted to know if this had something to do with the medication, if there was something else going on. And he didn't have an answer. He didn't know. Their medication should not have caused this. She was completely rational in every other way. She was holding conversations with people and she was making perfect sense, except that she was cuddling and rocking this as this child that nobody else could see. She wouldn't say anything more other than just cooing to this child, Danny, and talking to him about how much she missed him and how much she loves him and how long she's waited to hold him and all of this. So her children walked away that night very confused. The next day, her sister came to see her. And of course, some of her kids were there with her again because they knew that it was literally a day or so. They were spending as much time as they could. And her sister comes in and she sees her sister who's dying, holding this invisible baby again, talking to him. And nobody had any idea who this baby Danny was. There was nobody in the family that had ever heard of this Danny. But her sister, she said, "Oh, Mary, is it really Danny?" And Mary looked up at her and she said, "Yes." And her sister turned around and she said, "She never wanted any of you children to know, but before you were ever born, she had a baby who was stillborn and she named him Danny. And she never got to hold him. And for the last 2 days of her life before she passed away, she held him." And her family, rather than being distressed by all of this, were just amazed. And it made her passing easier because there was a comfort in knowing she was going to be with her son that she so longed to love. Now, was that child there? Well, like I said, she was completely cognizant in every other fashion. She was holding conversations with people, laughing and talking. But she saw her son. And it's interesting because there are so many of these stories. So Dr. Kerr started by collecting the stories from the hospice. Longtime staff there had stories of people in the past, but he wanted to hear the stories from the patients. So he began to put out the word that this is what he was after. And so it didn't take long for the stories to start coming in. And as the stories came in, other people began to get interested. There was a study in 2014 that concluded that most people have at least one episode or experience of a special dream or a visit or a visitation. Half of them are experienced while sleeping. Half actually see them while they're awake. Some of them even see living people that are still alive but are distant from them. And 18% of those end-of-life dreams or visions are unpleasant or distressing in nature. So it was fascinating to hear the consistency throughout. They also found that families that talked about this, that heard about this from the loved one, felt that it was easier to let go when they knew that there was family on the other side helping them. that gave them comfort and release. Now, I was with my mother for her passing, and I will tell you that I am, and I, because I did hospice, I am a firm believer that people should not die alone in a hospital room. They should die with their loved ones around them. It is better for them to grieve that out. It's a different type of grieving. It is better for the person who's passing away. They find they're much more peaceful, less agitated, less frightened. And I really believe these stories are amazing stories of love from beyond the grave. So that's why I wanted to share them today. So again, another story. There was this person who had was a cancer patient, and he would sit her son would sit by his mother's sick bed. The mother was the one who had cancer, and the mother had experiences in the last few days that she would tell her son. She said, "Oh, I see your father," and she described him smiling at her. And he said he could sense there was somebody in the room, and she saw her mother at one point, and she talked to her mother, and he was so relieved. And he said he valued the experience, because even though it's a taboo subject to talk about, those people who manage to do that are just so much better. And they don't have answers for, you know, for what causes this. There was a wonderful story about a nurse who came into a room, and she had a patient, and he was an atheist. And he was an avowed atheist. He was dying of cancer. And he said to them when he first came in, "I will fight like hell to the bitter end. I am not going to die. This is all we have, is this life. And I'm not giving it up easily." So he fought. And I've seen people do that, fight and struggle. And it's a painful thing to watch sometimes, because you know that no matter how hard they fight, they're still going to lose it, you know? And they're suffering through great pain and emotional trauma all at the same time. So one day this nurse comes in, and he's looking behind her, and he keeps looking behind her. And she says, turns around and looks, and there's nobody there. And she's like, "Is everything okay?" And he's like, "Jesus is in the room. He's been here for like a whole day." She's like, "Jesus? Yeah. What do you say to him?" And she was most puzzled, because first of all, he was an atheist, and he made a big deal about being an atheist. And secondly, she wasn't quite sure what to say. So she said, "Just tell him what's in your heart." And he looked at her for a moment, and he looked past her, and he began to talk to this entity she couldn't see. And then he kind of sighed and laid his head back. And she said, "Are you okay?" And he said, "Yes. But Jesus left." And she said, "Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that." He says, "It's okay. He told me he'll be back in 2 days to get me." And in 2 days, he was dead.
Yeah, I find these stories completely fascinating, only because, right, so in this case, we're Jesus, but other people seeing their loved ones, They're obviously not ghosts, or else they would have been around before. At least I don't see them as ghosts. But the people still see them, and they're there. So are they like straddling some line? They're halfway through a veil, halfway through a curtain, that they're seeing these people?
So when I've crossed people over, I've seen loved ones come to that entryway and take their hand and lead them through. So I think that we're able to, maybe even expected to, come back and help guide the people we love, whether they're our physical relatives or just emotionally we love them. And you know, I always make the joke that when I die, that my friend Steve's going to come and get me, because, you know, he's always been a very dear soul in my life. And I don't know that Steve's here all the time, although my one granddaughter talks to a Steve, which I find interesting. She's 2.5 years old, and she'll go out to my dining room, and she'll go, "Hi, Steve." Now, I don't see anything. I don't hear anything. But she's been talking to Steve since she turned 2. I have no clue. But, you know, I think that they can come back. Like, there's that tunnel of light. I don't know what happens beyond the tunnel of light. I couldn't even begin to guess what happens beyond the tunnel of light. But that tunnel of light, they can come back through it to be there to comfort and to ease people. And I've had those experiences, like I said, with clients sometimes. And they're amazing moments when you realize that they're talking about seeing their wife who's been dead for 10 years and she's standing there with them, waiting for them patiently or saying to them, it's all going to be okay. I've come to show you the way. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. There was another patient who I thought was really fascinating when they told the experience. So there was this gentleman named Barry. He was also from the New York facility. He had a very, very vivid dream one night that he was driving somewhere unknown. While he's in the dream, he hears the voice of his mother say, "It's all right. You're a good boy, and I love you." Barry woke up. He was completely convinced that he heard his mother's voice, and he was okay with passing then because he knew his mother was waiting on the other side, and this dream was about him having to take the journey, and she was letting him know she'd be with him for it. That's how he interpreted it. So, you know, I just find it fascinating that there are so many of these stories. Some of the stories are, you know, there's stories that 80% of the people, there are some people estimating up to 80% of people have some of these dreams. Here's another one. There was a story about a gentleman who was 73 years old, and he's passing away, his last day of his life. He has a dream that his best friend from childhood comes running up to him out of the house, and he's got a baseball glove and a bat, and he's laughing. And he says, "It won't be long till we'll be playing ball again, huh, Roger?" And Roger said he knew that that meant he was coming to get him soon, because they had both been lifelong baseball friends and aficionados, had played as kids and then, you know, sat there and watched the games and what have you. And it's just fascinating. There's a story of a gentleman who was in his 80s, and he had a kind of a distressing dream. He was trying to fix a crumbling brick and mortar foundation on a fence, and he was frustrated because he couldn't fix it. It kept falling apart and crumbling, and he woke up feeling anxious and upset because he wanted to know if somebody else would have to fix it. And he felt like he had left something undone. Is what he said, and he needed to address it and fix it before, like, it was giving a warning, hey, you still have this thing to take care of, you better take care of it now while you have that chance. And I thought that was fascinating. There's a woman who's in her 70s, late 70s, and she dreamt about her Catholic priest from when she was a little girl. His name was Father Sean, and he had been murdered in the 1960s. But in this dream, she saw him, and he said, "You're going to die in seven days, but don't be worried, my dear, I'll come for you." And she was totally okay because she knew who was coming to get her, and he would take her there where she needed to be. She found great peace in that. There are just some amazing stories. There's huge collections of them, and I just was fascinated to no end. There was a story about a gentleman who was passing away of cancer, a woman. She was staring at the corner, and she kept saying to others in the room, "Can you see her? Can you see her?" And they're like, "No, Mom, I don't see anybody." She's like, "No, can you see her?" And she's like, "No, Mom, I don't see anybody." And finally, the woman in bed turned and she said, "Mom, I'm so glad to see you." The woman smiled and she said, "I'm ready." And after that, the room just got very quiet and she passed away right then and there. Her mother came to take her home. She was ready to go. There's a story of a 68-year-old woman whose husband had passed away years earlier. And she was in the hospital, and she swore she saw her husband walk in the room with the dog that she had had for years and years. She'd had the dog for 22 years. It had passed away several years earlier, too. And the little dog's just tagging along with the guy. And her husband walked up to her and he took her hand. There were people in the room watching, and she held her hand out and she said her husband's name and she smiled at him. And then she looked down and she said, "Oh, I can't believe he is here." And she named the dog. And then she turned to her daughter and said, "I have to go. Your father's ready to show me the path." And she died. There are stories of religious icons, of angels being seen. As I said, the story of Jesus. There's a story about an older woman who was very alert, oriented. She would talk to the doctor about angels that gathered around her in the hospital. And she said, "It's all right. They're coming for me." And she was at peace with all of this. And just so you know, there are visions of beautiful, beautiful scenery. One lady said her aunt told her when she was dying, she saw a white porch filled with beautiful, fragrant flowers and a yard filled with flowers too beautiful to describe. People talk about vivid colors like we've never seen here on Earth. Beautiful scenery. And I'll tell you some other stories, but I will end this section of it by telling you this. When Thomas Edison passed away, his last words were, "It is so very beautiful over there." When Steve Jobs passed away, all he said was, "Oh, wow. Oh, wow." And then he died. So I've had a lot of experiences with this sort of thing. And I've told the story on the show before of my great-grandmother, who had heard angels singing. And she kept saying to her son that right before she passed away, "Oh, Chet, isn't it the most beautiful music you've ever heard?" And, I had a client, his name was John. He was a really lovely man. He was kind of fighting death. He had a wonderful family. They were very tight-knit, wonderful people. They were always around. It was his sons, his daughters, his grandchildren. There was always a group of them in the house. And I was with him. I was kind of close to him because I had him for a year, almost a year. And, you don't spend 4 or 5 days a week with somebody for almost a year, bathing them, feeding them, caring for them. And he could talk for a large part of that, most of it actually. And you don't get attached, you don't get feelings. So one day I was in there bathing him in his room and he said to me, "Would you think I'm crazy if I told you my wife comes down the stairs?" So they had put his room in the living room and he had his bed up against the side of the staircase. So you would come down the staircase around his bed and go out to the kitchen. And I said, "No, John, I wouldn't think you're crazy." And he sort of sighed a little like he was relieved. And he said, "Well, she's been coming for the last 2 or 3 nights and she's standing up there now." And I said, I couldn't see, of course, I didn't see her. And I said, "What is she saying, John?" And he says, "I think she wants me to go with her, but I'm afraid for the kids." And I leaned over and I took his hand and I said, "Oh, John, you're a great dad. All of your children love you and speak highly of you. All of your grandchildren love you to pieces. And they've all told you it's okay to go now." I knew he was in a lot of pain. He'd been in a lot of pain for several days. And he closed his eyes. Yep, everybody, my cat's helping. Mm-hmm. And And he closed his eyes and he sighed and he nodded. And he opened his eyes and he said to me, "It is okay to go." And I said, "If she's here, honey, it's okay to go." And he nodded his head and he dropped his hand on the bed and he left. And I did what I had to do, walked out and told the family, got through that whole process of calling the coroner, prepping the body and all that stuff, got to my car, went down the road, and I just wept. But I didn't weep with sadness on this one. I wept mostly with joy because I knew his wife had come for him. And I know this isn't the longest podcast we've ever done, but I wanted to share these stories. There are literally hundreds of them, but you have to dig and dig and dig for these stories. And I'll leave one last one. There was this doctor, Dr. Kerr, wrote a story about a woman. She was 90 years old, and she spoke many times of hearing beautiful choral music and feeling the brush of angel wings. When she spoke of those things, she would become calm and peaceful and smile. And one day he walked into the room, she was smiling. And she was gone. And he said, I like to think the angels came and took her. And may we all have such a wonderful, peaceful time. Death is something that is the great equalizer. It makes us all same. We will all experience it. And I think that we as a culture need to stop. Like, we'll talk about ghosts till the end of time, but talking about bedside visitations and communications through dreams by loved ones, that's something that's just kind of taboo. Doctors are afraid to talk about it because it borders on the spiritual. Nurses really don't know what to do with it. Some will talk about it, some will not. Hospice caregivers, if you're around anybody that's been in that business for a while, they'll usually have a story or two to tell. But it's a part of life, and I do believe with all my heart and soul, they have these experiences. They hear the heavenly choirs. They see the angels or their family members or their dog or whatever it is that came for them. And they are led home. I don't believe that many people are not led home. I will tell you that I've done crossing over folks who have passed away and are still on this side for almost 20 years. And I never had a case where somebody didn't come through and come for them. Never. Not once. It may not have always been what I would have anticipated. I had a mule come through one time, but then it made a lot of sense after I understood the story.
Yep, I remember you telling that one. And then the Civil War soldier with the bag of money, the bag of jewelry. Yeah.
And he had to let go of the jewelry to have his family members come through. But always somebody came through. I remember a little girl. She was like 20 years old or something, up in Cambria County, the spirit of a little girl, about 20 years old. She had Down syndrome. And I was desperately trying to find out who that person was for her. So I was like, well, you know, tell me about your mom. Tell me about your dad. And they were okay, but that wasn't the person she wanted. And I looked up and I saw this woman standing with a plate of cupcakes. There's an older lady with kind of the blue rinse that they used to use in their hair, you know, kind of what I'm talking about. And the spirit of this young girl, she's like, that's Mrs. Keller. And I'm like, who's Mrs. Keller? She's my teacher. Mm. Her teacher came to get her, brought her cupcakes with something that she could relate to.
Yeah, so, I know some people may argue that, okay, the brain of the dying person may be fabricating these things. I don't believe that to be true. All right. So I was at the deathbed of my father, and my mother was there as well. And he had Parkinson's. So obviously his brain wasn't working properly in the first place. But he passed very peacefully. There was nothing, you know, and he didn't feel any presence in the room or anything like that. On the converse, though, when my father-in-law died, I mean, and he was father to 7 children, and 6 of them were there at the time, and their spouses, and, you know, and I was there with Mrs. Stu. And he had had a stroke a few days earlier, and his wife had died years earlier. I remember my brother-in-law, Billy, was saying, like, it's okay, Vince, you can go. Doris is waiting for you. And he seemed a little agitated at that point, and that was more life than he had shown for a while, you know, having the stroke. But then right before he died, this big smile came across his face. And then he died.
I understand that sometimes people hallucinate because of the drugs or whatever. But these are people that overall, a lot of these stories are about people who were, they were cognizant. They were able to hold a conversation. They weren't in the throes of a drug that was causing them to hallucinate, or even that their brain was shutting out and hypoxia was kicking in. Mm-hmm. At that point, sometimes they're seeing stuff 2, 3, 4, 5 days before they pass, and it's repeated. The story about the woman with the little baby, Danny, how amazing is that? That was my favorite story of all of them. I truly believe that our loved ones come back to get us and help us across, that we never go over alone. I've never met anybody who's going over alone. And I truly believe that usually there's somebody or something that will come back for you to show you the way down that corridor of light. And I believe it with all my every fiber of my being. I've seen so many folks pass. I've seen about 8 plus my mother. And none of them had that fear and agitation at the end that you hear about. They were peaceful, sometimes smiling, very calm, sometimes reaching out to somebody that I couldn't see. And it's interesting because, like, I'm sensitive, but in those moments, I don't sense those people as much as I would if it was like a ghost. So I don't know how they come back. I don't know why they're so much more difficult for me to notice, but I don't believe that for a moment that they're not there. It's just a fascinating topic to me and a beautiful topic. I know death doesn't sound like a beautiful topic, but the peace of this makes it a beautiful topic.
Agreed.
With that, that's my last story for this evening. And I hope that everybody enjoyed them. If you have stories that you want to share of things like this that have happened in your life or your family's lives, we'd love to hear them. And we will treat them very respectfully.
Absolutely. So if our listeners have enjoyed Patty's stories this evening, please consider clicking the subscribe button if you're not already subscribed. If you are subscribed, we thank you very much. And I think we just went up 2 subscribers within the last 2 weeks. So yeah, we're still in double digits, but we got 2 more. And so if you have stories, comments, send them to our email address, paranormalist@theparanormalistpodcast.com. Check out our Facebook groups. And with that, I'm done too.
Good night.
Good night, Patty.